You're listening to Leaning Toward Wisdom, episode 5042. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. But I'll never forget the way you make me feel. It's episode 5042, and it will feature the very first Craving Encouragement segment. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. I would invite you to visit the website. Join the private Facebook group, if you dare. Those folks are getting to see a video of me sitting here in front of a microphone recording today's episode. Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit, that's our tagline. I don't use it a lot, but that pretty much tells you everything you need to know. Music fuels a lot of episodes around here. Music used to really fill a lot of episodes around here. Today's show is no different. It was sparked by a song that Drew and Ellie Holcomb recorded on the last record of Drew Holcomb, and it was called Dragons. That record came out just a month ago, August 2019. Track number 3 served as not just the inspiration for today's show, but I just stole the title. But I'll never forget the way you make me feel. Drew and Ellie, they met in college up in Tennessee. They are both 37. They've been married, for about 13 years. I don't know them personally. I really don't know much more than that. I've pretty much told you everything I know to tell you. Except that we can discern quite a lot by the music that they create together. I rather think that after 13 years, they are still in love with each other, and they're still in love with their music. It's a pretty sweet gig they got going. I mean, being able to play music together. I'm thinking of Jason Isbell and his wife. I mean, there are a number of people like that. Chris Stapleton and his wife. I got my own sweet gig going. No, it's not mute. Well, I play music with my finger. I click play, but today I'm going to tell you all about it. Well, okay. I'm not going to tell you all about it, but I am going to tell you enough about it to spark your own reflections into your own life. That really is the point. That's really the point of every show, now that I think about it, is just sharing these stories, sharing these insights, and hopefully it causes you to reflect and it causes you to be inspired to figure some things out. Today, it's especially about the most important people in your life. I intended this show, today's show, to be something, well, frankly, something quite different. I even teased about it over in the private Facebook group. I was planning to do an episode that was entitled Love, Laughter, and Levity. And that was going to be this episode. And I had already done the art for the episode. It featured 3 photographs, one of 3 of the 5 grandkids, all the youngest grandkids, and then a picture of the very youngest grandkid, and then a picture of the only granddaughter when she was a bit younger, wearing this mask. It's pretty funny. You can see it. Just go to Leaning Toward Wisdom. I'll make a short link to this. So just go to leaningtowardwisdom.com/5042, and you can go right there. The more I worked on that episode with that working title, Love, Laughter, and Levity, the more I worked on it, the worse things got. I just kept getting stuck. And I will tell you, I don't get stuck all that often. Not really. Not when I'm trying to communicate or when I'm writing or when I'm kind of developing a show. And I'm not really sure why it was so hard. And I kept looking at it, and I kept noodling around on it, And I started with that last topic. I started with the subject of levity. And maybe that was a poor strategy. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. Because it's frankly, it's a pretty easy subject for me. I'm real sober-minded, and I have a really sober demeanor, but I really enjoy snarkiness, and I really enjoy sarcasm, and I really enjoy levity. And as for laughter, I laugh pretty regularly. But I was stuck. Well, I was walking, as I am wont to do, in the wee hours of the morning, and I am listening to music, as I am wont to do. And I've already told you that the ideal time here in suburban America, suburban North Texas, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, between 1:30 and 3:30 in the morning is kind of the sweet spot. If you want to walk and you want, the city is pretty quiet between 1:30 and 3. And it's not like I live downtown. I'm in suburbia, but you can still hear the highway in the distance. But between 1:30 and 3:30, it's really quiet for city folks. And so I'm walking, and at some point I don't know what I was listening to, but I activate Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors, this last record called Dragons. First up is a tune called Family. Now, I have listened to this tune over and over again. In fact, I went and watched when this record first came out sometime back in August. They did a video of this, and I'm going to put this in the show notes, leaningtowardwisdom.com/5042, because you need to watch it. The song is only 2 minutes and 20 seconds long, but it features a lot of people in the Nashville music scene, and it's pretty clever. The lyrics are kind of funny. It's called Family. That's the very first track on this new record. So I'm walking and I listen to that. So that kind of puts a smile on my face, because it's a great video. And I'm envisioning this video that I've watched a lot. And I instantly go to that first L word that I was working on, but I hadn't worked on it. I'd started with levity. I kind of had sort of dabbled with laughter, but I really hadn't talked about love as I was prepping for what I thought was going to be today's show. But now I'm thinking about that. And if you don't know it already, I'm a hopeless romantic. I'm very sentimental. Always have been. And there is no cure. I mean, not that I'm trying, but there isn't. So I'm going to give you a warning that this episode is going to lean into... It's going to lean all into this. So if kind of being romantic and being sentimental, if that's not your thing, I get it. It's a shame, because I really think you're missing out on some of life's most terrific moments, in my opinion. But that's okay. You can roll however you want to roll. So feel free to hit stop and you can catch the next episode. I will try to understand. I just admit it won't be terribly easy. Well, by the time track 3 rolls around, so I've started listening to Dragons, and I've listened to track 1, and now track 3 pops in. And I've listened to this song many, many, many times before. And so I launched the song, and I'm a mess. I'm an emotional mess. But I'll never forget the way you make me feel. Here's a 37-year-old couple. They are alive in my earbuds. This song that I have listened to many, many times before, and they are singing about growing old together. Him, at the end of the song, he said, you know, he's looking back now as though he's an old man. He's not. He's 37. Unable to remember specific details, maybe, and even unable to recognize this face that's looking back at him, because, well, he's aged. But he remembers the way she makes him feel. We are 62 now, me and Rhonda. We are growing older together. We have grown older together, and we're continuing to grow older together. We're pushing hard on entering our 42nd year of marriage. year 45 of being a couple. And being 17 or 18 and in love is, it's pretty stinking terrific. It is, I admit it. Being 62 and being in love with that same person that you were in love with when you were 17 or 18, that's just even better. It just is. There's a photograph that kind of serves to, is the cover art for today's show, but I put a larger version of it on the website. I told you, you're going to want to go. So just go ahead and go now. LeaningTowardWisdom.com/5042. And that photograph and the sun is coming, you know, into the lens and kind of making the picture a bit, I don't know, creative. That's the word I'll use. It was likely a Saturday. I'm kind of like Drew Holcomb. I don't remember that detail. I really don't. But that's about the only thing I don't remember. We were at a park at the far end, the southern end of Highland Road in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And we were flying kites, or at least we had been earlier. I lived, well, at the northern end of Highland Road is the entrance, the south entrance to LSU, Louisiana State University. So we're at the far other end of Highland Road. And it's a very scenic, picturesque kind of a road. I lived somewhere between the entrance of LSU and this park where we were. And Rhonda had come down from Fort Worth to visit. We were dating, we hadn't married yet, but we were already a couple. Well, you can see by the photograph. I was mad about her. And I was getting more so by the day. And in this photograph, you see, you know, she's off to my side. She's got her arm in the crook of my arm. You know, I'm holding on to her fingers. Yeah, I remember it. I remember the day. Attending classes at LSU was drudgery, just absolute pure drudgery, except for handwriting every day letters that I would then race off to the student union to drop into the mail. And I would check my mailbox for her letters. And it was a habit that we maintained for over 2 years. I mean, it's what you do in the 1970s when you don't live in the same place. And you don't have the internet because it hadn't been invented yet. And you don't have cell phones because they haven't been invented yet. And you don't have social media because, well, it hadn't been invented yet. And there's no FaceTime. No. The music that weekend, I recall there was a heavy rotation of Poco's album, Crazy Eyes. And I was a big time Richie Furay fan. He was the leader of Poco and kind of the lead singer. And he had the talent to pull off the title track to that record. It is a 10-minute title track. The music was really, that was really taking hold in Baton Rouge at the time and LSU, this college town, and it was progressive country. It's at least what we called it. My eyes were crazy. My eyes had been crazy for this Texas girl that I had begun to date. And we were at this park, we're flying kites, and I'm supposing my sister or somebody else is with us because you can tell by looking at the picture, this is not an old school selfie. I took some old school selfies, but you can clearly tell I'm kind of holding the camera. And back then, you had no idea. You couldn't go immediately check it. I mean, this is film we're talking about. A Kodak Instamatic camera. Very old school. As you can tell by looking at the photographs, they've got just incredibly low resolution. I don't think you can take pictures with that low resolution anymore. I'm glad we had it, though, because if I had not had this Kodak Instamatic camera, we wouldn't have any records of any of this. So I'm really glad I've got them. You know, it's not like kids today. You don't have any idea. because everywhere you go, you've got your phone, and your phone has got this terrific camera. I mean, just now the Apple iPhone 11 Pro has come out. It's got basically three cameras. You know, it's got this super wide angle, a wide angle, and a telephoto. And I mean, the pictures are better than anything that was around when Rhonda and I were dating. You couldn't buy a camera that would take photographs that good. I mean, professionals couldn't buy photographs or cameras that would take photographs as good as cell phones will take today. So it is with technology. You know, now you can just whip out your phone and, I mean, you can rattle off 1,000 photographs in a month really easily today. It's not quite how it was. I felt lucky to have a Kodak Instamatic because I didn't have to thread the film through the thing. The film came in this little cartridge, and you just put the cartridge in and advanced it until it showed number one, and you were ready to take your first photograph. If you had an SLR camera, yeah, you had to pop the cartridge in, pull the film over the shutter, and then advance it. And yeah, I wasn't rich enough to afford one of those kind of cameras. Certainly wasn't talented enough to know how to work one. My camera was just this black box with a fixed lens. It was point and shoot, point and shoot. And then you would take that cartridge out. You'd put it, you'd go to the drugstore. They had these envelopes, and you'd stick it in this envelope. You'd write your name and all the critical data about yourself on it, seal the envelope, give it to them, and they would develop it. And within a week or so, you get a call, your photos are ready, and you'd go pay for them. And usually they had a deal where they'd give you two copies. You got extra copies. So that was great because now I could keep a copy and I could give Rhonda a copy. I don't know where they all went. We've still got a lot of photographs. I mean, obviously, because I have scanned them here for your perusal at leaningtowardwisdom.com/5042. Quite a deal. There's a photograph, and I've laughed at it. I continue to laugh at it. I'm looking at it right now, and I'm laughing at it. There's a photograph of us sitting on a sofa, and, you know, nobody had to tell me to wear a collared shirt in the 1970s. I mean, if you go look, you will see what a hideous monster of a collar that was worn under, I might add, a polyester leisure suit. I don't know if I'm more ashamed of the outfit or my hair or those sideburns. I mean, it's all just atrocious. She looks spectacular. I just look like, I don't know, man, I look like something out of an Elvis movie, a bad Elvis movie. I mean, you look at this gorgeous girl. Are you going to question her taste? Really? Are you? Well, okay, maybe. You can't question mine. Well, not when it came to her. You can certainly question my ability to style myself and clothe myself or to find a barber capable of trimming those sideburns. But I had found a girl in Texas, and I've got my arm around her here, and I put my arms around her, and I was not going to let go. Well, the way she makes me feel, that started on July the 2nd, 1975. July the 2nd, 1975, our first date. And I won't get all mushy and tell you how stupidly head over heels in love I was. By January the 2nd, 1978, we were walking down the aisle saying our I do's to each other in Fort Worth, Texas. In the same church building where we now, and have for 30 years, where we now worship three times a week. So there's that. And if you think this garb that I've got on, if you think this big wide collared shirt, With the collar outside the jacket, that's the most moronic stylistic choice. Yeah, but we were young and we were stupid. Well, I was young and stupid. If you think that's an embarrassing photograph, you've not seen my wedding pictures, and you won't. I was wearing a white tux. I looked like a big polar bear with a mustache, and you didn't think I could top that leisure suit look. Well, you would be wrong, you idiot. My lack of style knows no bounds. But I could look halfway decent, so I need to include a photograph where I look halfway decent, even moderately cool, I would say, even if it was a plaid shirt with an oversized collar. I guess all the collars were oversized then, because I look back at the pictures and it's like the collars were just ginormous. But there's proof. There's proof. There's a photograph of me outside of Rhonda's house in Fort Worth, car keys in hand. I am likely about to head out and begin my 11-hour, that's right, 11-hour trek back to Baton Rouge. I mean, there was only four-lane interstate between Dallas-Fort Worth and Shreveport. And after that, okay, it's mostly two-lane highway. And then, especially during cane season, you're dodging sugarcane wagons. Not fun. So don't let that slight smile in the photograph where I look halfway decent, I look kind of cool. Yeah, don't let that smile fool you. I would imagine I was dying inside, knowing that I was going to have to spend a full day driving back home by myself, and my heart was going to stay right there where she was. Because everything I cared about was right there on Nancy Lane. I kept a journal log in my car because I would always track my gasoline. So anytime I filled up with gas, I would write down the mileage and all the pertinent details. Rhonda used to make fun of me. I had always done that. No, I don't do that anymore. So I'm sure at some point I knew how many trips I'd made to see her. I've long forgotten that by now. I don't remember. I can tell you this, it wasn't nearly enough. I didn't make nearly enough trips to suit me. And we're talking about taking off work from working retail, selling stereo equipment, going to school, and then in the afternoon and evenings working retail. So I had to beg the boss to let me off on a Saturday, retail's biggest day. And then I'd blitz out at about 7 p.m. and I'd hit the highway and I would pull onto Nancy Lane where Rhonda lived around 6 o'clock Saturday morning. So I'd just drive all night. That would begin our 30-hour weekend together before I had to load into Sundance. Sundance was the name given to my 1972 Pontiac Le Mans because the color of the paint, according to Pontiac, it was Sundance orange. You know, this hot rod. I'd get into the car after a 30-hour visit. I've already driven 11 hours, so I mean, I'm spending 24 hours in the car, 22 hours in the car to spend 30 hours, and oh yeah, I would have spent many, many more hours in the car than that. There's another picture of a goodbye. We're standing outside beside Sundance, so if you want to see what Sundance looked like, you can certainly do that. And I've got both arms around her waist, and I'm not wanting to let go. I mean, the trips back home, they just sucked. They sucked. I mean, I was saved only by keeping the windows rolled down and playing music just as loud as I could play it all the way back home. That went on for over 2 years. All the while, my life was in turmoil at home because, well, I hated school. I didn't have any idea what I wanted to do with my life. And the girl that I loved, she's 11 hours away. I mean, it just couldn't get any worse than that. And nothing would turn it around till we got married. Because it was then that I jumped into journalism school, where I just fell into what I felt I was meant to do. To write, to create, to fulfill curiosity, mostly in a word, communicate. And I was selling stereo gear and well, selling it was mostly listening to music to show it off. And I loved that too. And we're now 3 years or so down the line from that first date. We're married. It's been an arduous 3 years to get to this point. A lot has changed. A lot has changed for me. Now, okay, here, I'll throw another picture in. Lest you think that I didn't have any degree of coolness. The leisure, it's going to take multiple photographs to overcome the leisure suit photograph. There's a picture taken of me. This was, I think, within one day of our first date. Cool, hip, handsome even. None of that's changed. Yeah, right. You know, most everything has changed. Well, okay, most everything else has changed. All because of this girl from Fort Worth. She was making me feel different than I had ever felt before. Over the years, look at that photograph. Over the years, I lost the hair. I lost the mirrored sunglasses. That was a big thing in the 70s. I didn't lose much else. Okay, I'd lose a lot more. And I'd gain a little bit. Come to think of it, I would lose and gain all at the same time over the course of time. And you need to stop laughing because you've done exactly the same thing. Go look in the mirror. Uh-huh. I'll wait. Well, let's get back to Drew and Ellie Holcomb, shall we? And this tune that prompted today's show and even serves as the title. It's early in the morning. I'm walking. It's the middle of the night. The song is playing in my earbuds, and I'm a mess. I am an emotional mess. I start to cry. I admit it. I'm man enough to admit that I cry. And I'm crying. And I don't mean just barely. I mean, I wouldn't quite describe it as weeping. I have wept before. I'm not weeping, but I'm crying. I'm big time crying. And I keep walking, and I keep listening, and the song ends, and the next song starts to play, track 4, and I hit stop, because I don't want to listen to that song. I want to go back. I mean, here I am. I'm an emotional mess. I want to go back, and I want to listen to this track again, and so I do. This is what I do, by the way. I embrace weepy moments. I embrace darkness. I embrace kind of whatever these feelings are in the moment. I'm really good at it. I'm really, really good at embracing a moment and just holding it. And that's what I'm doing here. And it ends. I've listened to it, I think, 3 times now. And it ends for the 3rd time. And now I'm ready for silence. I keep walking. And now I'm trying to conscientiously figure out what I'm feeling. Because I admit I don't fully understand the depth of the weeping. Well, I'm not weeping really, but the depth of the crying. There's just this symphony of feelings. Because I know I'm feeling grateful. I'm feeling very thankful. I'm feeling happy. But I'm feeling ridiculously sad, and I'm feeling in love, and I'm remembering, and I'm thinking back, and I'm thinking of these Kodak moments. I'm thinking of these photographs that I'm sharing with you now like an idiot. Mostly, I'm thinking of how I need to do more. That jumps to the forefront pretty quickly. I need to do more. I need to be more for her. And I'm wondering, I'm really, really wondering am I giving her what she most wants? Have I given her what she wanted? Have I given her a life that she even remotely expected? I mean, it's not like I'm completely in charge of her life, but we're tethered together. And I'm wondering, you know, when she said yes on July the 2nd to go out with me that night, I'm wondering, you know, does she got any regrets at all? I absolutely don't, but I'm looking at my life and I'm thinking, how could she not? I mean, she's not stupid. But I'm wondering that. I'm walking, it's dark, and I'm wondering if she's got regrets, if she feels like she got it right. Did she get it right by agreeing to be by my side all these years? Me, I know I got it right. I absolutely know I got it right. And life has been largely not what I planned, but mostly things have worked out. I mean, some things have gone very wrong, but most things have gone very right. Yeah, okay, some things have just kind of been there. You know, you just kind of got to do what you got to do. And there's really only one major thing in our life that has gone horribly wrong, and admittedly, it's enormous. No, not something I'm going to talk about, except to let you know that our lives are very imperfect. We've suffered heartbreak and we have suffered sorrow. But there's one important detail that you really ought to know, and that is mostly our heartbreak and sorrow have not come, well, I started to say they haven't really come at our own hands. And all I mean by that is we have not intentionally hurt one another. I mean, some of our trouble, of course, has come from our own idiocy. So, yeah, we made our own bed in that regard. But as far as us as a couple, we've never been guilty of intentionally trying to hurt one another. I keep walking. It's still dark, very dark. I keep walking. I keep thinking. I'm trying to figure out why this flood of emotions is happening. I'm trying to figure out why is this song now? I've listened to the song before, and yes, it's made me cry before, but now it's, I mean, I'm a mess. I'm sad and I'm happy all at the same time. I'm sad that so many years have passed. I'm happy that we have experienced so many of these years together. And I'm thinking of Drew and Ellie, and I'm thinking of these two 37-year-olds who have been singing to me 13 years into the marriage, and I'm remembering our life together, and I'm thinking about those very first years in married housing at LSU. Life inside a 540-square-foot apartment. And I'm remembering riding my bike to classes and riding my bike all over campus before heading off to work in the afternoons. Yeah, I had to drive a car to get to work. I'm remembering our joint effort every Saturday morning. We get up and we clean our little humble apartment. And I'm thinking of how two kids married and in love, how we could feel so free, you know, so free inside such a small space. And mostly I'm thinking of how terrific that space was, and it didn't feel small at all. I didn't feel claustrophobic in any way, shape, or form. We might as well have been living in, you know, 11,000 square feet as far as I was concerned. You know, life was pretty simple. I mean, we had plenty of room. We had room to spare in 540 square feet. And most of our existence was the campus. It was the campus of this major university. And I had gone from loathing this place to really loving this place, all because that girl in the picture, she made me feel very differently about it all and very differently about my life. And then it happened again. I mean, just as I'm walking, I'm getting my emotions kind of under control, and I lose them again. And the song's not even playing. And I'm thinking, where did the time go? Just where did the time go? Mostly I'm feeling that I didn't seize every opportunity that I should have. And there's nothing specific that I'm regretting. I'm just feeling like, I don't know, I should have smelled more. I should have just bathed in it more in the moment. But nobody does. Oh, people talk about it, but nobody does. And the reason that nobody does is because it's impossible. You can't live your life that way. I mean, life would be ridiculously precarious if we could do that. Life has to be routine. Much of life has to be ordinary. If it weren't, we'd go crazy. But I'm regretting the ordinariness of it all. I'm regretting that sanity demands that we have this habit and this routine. I'm regretting that, but it's true, and I know that it's true. Logically, I get it and I understand it. I'm wishing that life could be now and could have been just as adventurous as many of those early years. I'll tell you what young couples do that older couples don't, or certainly don't do as well or as often, and that's talk about their future. You know, because you get to a point in life where you have a lot more past than you do future. And when you're young, you assume that you've got a lot more future than you do past, and if it works out statistically, that's true. Right? So Rhonda and I got married, and I was 6 months, you know, we were 6 and 7 months shy of turning 21. Okay, well, Drew and Ellie married, and they were about 24. Well, high lands, you know, you're looking you're looking ahead and you're building this life together. And it's, yeah, it's super cool. It's super cool. I'm putting a photograph. You can tell by looking at the sidebar of the photograph, June 1970. It's a birthday celebration. I can tell you it's at our house. It's at our house. Well, as this walk continues in the night, and I feel like I'm kind of settling down emotionally, and I settle into the practical reality that life is largely routine. I know that. I understand that. I'm not fighting that. Emotionally, I kind of am, but at a practical level, I'm not. In fact, I gave a sermon at church just this past Wednesday night. Yeah, sure. I'll link it up if you want to hear me preach a sermon. Why not? And I preached a sermon Wednesday night about Samson. And for some reason, in that sermon, I was inspired to mention how my maternal grandmother, her name was Marie, and she behaved with tremendous predictability. I mean, you talk about just kind of ordinary and routine. I mean, pretty much did the same thing the same way every single day. We all, including me, called her Ree, short for Marie. That's her. You can go see the photograph over at the website. That's her in the pale blue dress. And that's me across the table from her, leaning on the table. I look like just some punk teenage kid. We've got these stupid little birthday hats on our head. Her life was extremely routine. She was a big impact on me. But it was routine and it was ordinary in all the best ways. She tended to folks. You know, she baked and she cooked all the time. It's what she did. She was a woman of service. It's who she was. It's what she did every day. Now, to the outside world, you'd look and you'd think, okay, nothing amazing, nothing award-winning, nothing that the world would describe as some grand achievement, some great success. But, yeah, to the lives that she touched, she made a difference. She made a difference to me, and I was just a little kid. My point in the sermon was that her daily routine was a dedication to righteousness. Her dedication every single day in all the small ways and in all the biggest ways was spiritual pursuits. Contrast that with Samson, who was the topic of my sermon. Samson every day, he was pursuing selfishness, right? I mean, Samson, he wanted what he wanted. And our lives are largely defined by the ordinary daily pursuits of our life. Your life, my life, everybody's life is largely defined by our routine. Our routine. There's another photograph I'll put. I look a little bit better. The tie is as wide as a bib, but there's that. Anyway, that's Ree. I'm on one side of her. That's my sister, who is 6 years older than me, on the other side of her. I'm not regretting. I'm walking in the dark, and I'm an emotional wreck. And I'm not regretting the routine as much in this moment as the fact that now I'm thinking about how I want to be able to improve engineering something more. I don't mean all the time, but if only now and again. And adventure is the only word that's coming to my mind here in these wee hours of the morning. I'm thinking about adventure, and I keep dwelling on that. But simplicity is the other word that I keep thinking about. Because I'm still thinking about that 540-square-foot apartment and how, really? I mean, we had everything we owned in this place, and we still had room. So I'm thinking adventure, and I'm thinking simplicity, and I'm thinking we had that. We had that. Then Rhonda has a sewing room. It's a pretty large sewing room. Me, coupled with the yellow studio here, these two rooms are almost as large as our entire first apartment. I mean, 540 square feet on the campus of LSU. But man, it was terrific. It was terrific. It was cozy. It wasn't cramped. It was so unfancy. It was great. You know, I mean, it was great. Wasn't embarrassed to have anybody over. Okay, maybe you couldn't have a lot of people over, but I didn't want to have a lot of people over anyway. I don't want to have a lot of people over now. It was just so perfect in so many ways. Yeah, okay. Having a washer and dryer in the bathroom, that's probably not ideal. But it was fine. It was fine. And a kitchen. Okay, yeah, the kitchen. It had a pretty rinky, you know, when you are taller than the refrigerator, but it was plenty big enough, right? It was plenty big enough. The stove, you know, the little stovetop range thing, it was, I'm sure campers had nicer gear in them, even at the time, but I'd go back in a heartbeat. I'd go back in a heartbeat. I wouldn't do that over differently for all the tea in China. I might find out that my memories are more sentimental and more romantic than reality, but I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think I've got a really good grasp of the accuracy of it all. I'm walking and I'm looking and I'm noticing tonight as I'm walking that the moon is not nearly as high in the sky as it was just a few weeks ago. And I remember thinking, man, I used to come out here in the wee hours of the morning and the moon would be just almost directly overhead. And when it was full, well, I mean, the light would be bright enough. You could easily see where you were going. But now it's darker. It's darker. Tonight, the moon is not full and it's not overhead. If overhead is 12 o'clock, and it is, I mean, the moon's at most, it's at 10 o'clock. Directly ahead, overhead, I look up, and without even thinking about it, you can just spot the Big Dipper. Super easy to do. Even here in a suburban neighborhood, very easy to see. And so I stare up at the sky, I'm staring up at the Big Dipper, and I keep walking, and it's quiet. I've still got the earbuds in my ear, so I take them out, and all I can hear is the sound of my footsteps. There's no traffic. There are no dogs barking. There are some birds. I see some birds out on the ground. They're roaming around the ground for food. The early bird gets the worm and all that. I'm guessing they're prowling for insects, but what do I know? I don't know nearly enough about birds. I'm thinking of the Yellow Studio. I'm thinking of all my books. I'm thinking of all the CDs that I have. I'm thinking of all the stuff that I have, the stuff that I just don't care about. I care about a lot of it, but there's an awful lot I don't care about. Rhonda, she's been looking for a couple of days. She's got some sewing patterns that she has misplaced. She can't remember where she put these things, and it's driven her crazy for a couple of days. She found them, by the way. She found them yesterday. But in her quest to find these things, we both acknowledge we've got to get rid of some of this stuff. We've got too much stuff. I mean, we can't even keep up with the stuff. We don't even know where the stuff is at. It wasn't always that way. From LSU, we bought our first little house, and boy, life got really good. If you thought life was good in 524 square feet, well, you hadn't lived till you move into a house. I missed the campus because we didn't live within bicycle riding distance of the campus. That kind of sucked. You know, I had to put the bike in the car and park, and then I rode. But we had our own two-bedroom place now. We had a full kitchen. Oh, yeah, we had a refrigerator that was bigger than I was. That was pretty cool. I mean, it felt like a mansion. And Zeke, we had our very first pet, a black lab. That's a story for another day. But Zeke joined us in the backyard. We had big, big, big trees. And the house was just this simple frame wood home. It may as well have been a multi-million dollar estate for all I cared. We had a new maroon Toyota Corolla hatchback. Because it was maroon, we named it Rooney. Monthly cost? $122. That was the car payment. The mortgage payment was $100 more, $222 a month. We both worked and went to school, and it may have been the financial zenith of our life. I mean, not that our income was at a zenith, but our cost containment sure was. I mean, we pretty much had anything we wanted. We went out to eat whenever we wanted. I mean, not too tough, really, when you're young and you're both working and you're both really frugal. You're both really practical people. Neither of you is impulsive with money, and that has remained true all of our lives. There was one major element of our life that wasn't so terrific. And some won't likely understand this, and that's perfectly okay. I get it. But spiritually, that is, our church life was not very good. We knew we needed to elevate that part of our life, and for us that meant we need to move. We need to move. No small thing, since it meant leaving school. Now, Rhonda, you should know this. Rhonda is smarter than me. Certainly a better student. I mean, she was accustomed to making all A's through all the grades of her life, including college, right? Top scores and all that. And until I got into journalism school, I was marred by mediocrity. I had been a good student all through public school. I was a good student. But frankly, I had not learned how to study. Well, let me qualify that. I had not learned how to study a subject that I didn't care about. Uh-huh. What I was is I was a great listener. I listened really well in class, and I took great notes. And as a result, I could make A's without study. Okay, that didn't work for me at college, because college doesn't work that way. Right? I mean, the teacher can get up there and they can wax on for 45 minutes about something that will never appear on any exam. You know, it's very much self-directed, and I just did not have the discipline to do that because there were just so many of these courses I just didn't care about. Cutting classes, that didn't help much either. Once I entered the College of Journalism, that's all she wrote. The grades shot up. A's were easy. I was into it. My interest and my curiosity drove me to excel. Now, I knew deep down, I'm never going to enter the world of professional journalism. It's not going to happen. And I didn't really know or understand or even think at the time about how these skills are going to, am I going to even be able to incorporate any of this stuff? Turns out I would. Turns out I did. Turns out I have. That it was really, for me, it was all about communication. It was all about storytelling. It was just about connecting. All about connecting. The problem at the time of our dilemma was I was closing in on my degree. I was about 18 hours shy of graduating when we packed up, sold our house, and left town. Was it a regret? Yes and no. Leaving town for the reasons that we did, no regret. Not earning my degree, yeah. Rhonda not earning her degree, even more so, even a bigger regret for me, because she's so smart, she deserved to earn it, more so than I did. And we had no way of knowing it at the time, but it really didn't have any impact on my career. Well, to be fair, how can you ever know? You can't know. I mean, that's the thing about decisions. You only know the outcome of the choices that you made. You think you know how it may have turned out if you would have made a different choice, but you don't know that. I mean, there's nothing about it that you can know. And I really never cared. You can speculate all day, but I never did really care about not having the degree, really, until the last couple of years. And I can't explain that. I don't know why. I guess it's just me getting older and wishing that we both had achieved it, because we were plenty sharp enough to achieve it. Crying and spilled milk leaps to my mind, though, so I don't dwell on it too terribly much. By now, the sky is still dark. You thought I was going to say something else. Listen, this is happening in the wee hours of the morning. It's hours away from being light yet. I'm still walking. I'm listening to the sounds of the city come alive. Kind of, sorta. The sounds change at around 3:30. They just do. The sounds of a little bit of traffic in the distance, that's picking up. It's still very quiet. And, yep. I click play and I listen to this song now. I don't know if this is the third time or the fourth time, but it's one of those. but I'll never forget the way you make me feel. And now I'm wondering how I've made her feel. I know how she's made me feel. Have I made her feel as good about her life choices as she has made me feel about mine, especially as it relates to her? I'm hoping so, but I freely admit while I'm walking, I'm wondering because I don't know. Fast forward, and we're 25 years old. We've been married slightly more than 4 years. Our son was born when we were 23. A daughter who, by the way, bore a middle name of my grandmother that I love so much, Marie. She came quickly after. And we were having to figure things out. We were having to figure things out very quickly. But we were at long last where we knew we needed to be spiritually. We were in Edmond, Oklahoma. I was born in Ada, Oklahoma. So for me, going back to the state of Oklahoma was a bit like going home. And frankly, you know, Texas is just Baja, Oklahoma. So Texas, Oklahoma, it's six, one half dozen another. Except when Texas plays OU. In college football, and then all bets are off. But we went to Edmond, Oklahoma. There was an older preacher whom I had great respect for, and I had known him virtually all of my life. Church was the priority for us. It was the priority for us individually. It was the priority for our family. And Rhonda and I had met at church, and we shared a faith. We shared in our devotion to that faith. We were raising and training our children in the faith. And that's what took us to the Oklahoma City area, specifically Edmond. Edmond is a northern kind of a bedroom community of Oklahoma City. And being part of a congregation, that was important to us as well. I was always active in church work. I delivered my first, well, we'll call it a talk. I don't know that it was much of a sermon when I was 11. I never aspired to be an evangelist. I never aspired to be a preacher. It's crossed my mind a time or two. But I wanted to be the most competent congregational teacher that I could be. A public teacher delivering sermons in a local congregation like I just did this past Wednesday night. And here was an elderly evangelist in Edmond, and I had begun to study with him every week. Eventually, my career took a solid turn for the better. I was running a retail company, still in consumer electronics. And Rhonda and I both, we were both burning the candle at both ends. I was working about 80 hours a week and spending a significant time in church work. I was preaching at the congregation about four times every month while studying with my mentor every Tuesday night. Rhonda, she had her hands full with two toddlers and her own work. I look back, I don't know how she did it. I don't know how either one of us did it, but we did. I mean, when you're young, you just don't have any idea of what's possible. And you certainly don't have any idea of what's impossible. You just do what you have to do. Well, come to think of it, nothing changes when you're older either. It's pretty much all the same. I've got a couple of photographs of me with our two rugrats. Fast forward. Past some very tough times and some very good times and some ordinary times. And it's probably looks much like your life and like everybody else's life. Life happened and we made the most of it mostly. And at other times, I'm sure we struggled. Well, I don't assume we did. At other times, we absolutely struggled to figure out what was even happening to us. Unable to make the most of anything because, well, you know, you're just fighting to stay alive sometimes. But we did survive. And life gave us lines and wrinkles and blemishes and age spots and bruises. The other day, I pick up the two grandsons, the two oldest boys from school, and Jake is the 10-year-old. Max is his 12-year-old brother. And Jake and I are outside of Max's school waiting for him to get out. And he is showing me some scar he's got on his ankle. And I tell him, I got a million scars. And so I show him three, all of them created by orthopedic surgeons. One on one elbow, one on the other elbow, and one, you know, kind of at the base of my neck where I had, you know, cervical spine fusion. I show him these scars, and I explain to him that most of mine, even though I've just shown you three that were made by a surgeon, most of mine weren't made by a surgeon. And frankly, most of mine aren't even visible. They're not even physical. Well, I'm still on my walk. I've listened to this song now for the umpteenth time, and I'm still a mess, and I'm meandering my way back home. And I'm thinking of what we've accomplished together, and I'm thinking of the millions and millions of dollars that I have managed through the years of running businesses. I'm thinking of the doctors and the surgeons that she has served because, well, that's what she was doing when we met. That's what she still does. And I'm thinking of our church work, and I'm thinking of the people that we have tried to influence for good. And for whatever reason, I'm particularly thinking of all the kids. I'm thinking of the kids. I posted at Facebook. I'm not going to share it at the website because she's not my little girl, but we got a number of little kids at church, and there's a little girl, and I call her Smiley because she smiles. She smiles all the time. I get my phone and I go up to her, and I took like four pictures. I posted it at my Facebook page, and I'm thinking about her, and I'm thinking about all the other little people that have populated my life through the years. And I'm thinking about my grandmother. I'm thinking about Ree, and I'm thinking about all that she missed. And I'm thinking of Rhonda's mom. Rhonda's mom, shortly after we moved into the house, we were in our first, maybe our second year of marriage, and her mother passed away, breast cancer. She was 43. And I'm thinking of everything that she missed. And I'm thinking of everything that Rhonda missed in not having her mom around through the bulk of our life together. I'm thinking of all of our stuff. I'm thinking of the physical things that at some point they seem important, right? I mean, else you wouldn't have got them. And maybe at some point they even seem urgent, but yeah. I'm thinking, and I feel like, well, emotionally, I'm not physically, but I might as well be physically. I'm back in that little apartment. I'm back in that 524 square foot apartment at LSU. I'm thinking of how all of our possessions have fit inside this place, and we still have room. And I'm thinking how the smallest U-Haul truck that you could rent at the time would easily catch what we had. Of course, you know, you didn't have any appliances because that all stayed in the apartment, and that might have made it. Well, no, the washer and dryer, that was ours, but none of the kitchen appliances were ours. And I'm thinking of how happy I was, and I think she was too. I'm thinking about how happy we were, and I keep thinking, as I am wont to do, and I keep walking. In spite of the heartbreaks, in spite of all the sorrows, and there's been plenty, it would take multiple seasons of a podcast to just catalog them. It still is impossible for me to forget the way she makes me feel. And with all the joy, with all the laughter, with all the success, with all the victories, it's still impossible for me to forget the way she makes me feel. And I know that our lives are just like your life, horribly imperfect. And I also know that I've let her down more times than either one of us can count. And not because I planned on it, not because I intended it, not because I wanted to, but because I'm too often, I'm just lame like that. And I'm remembering the promises that I made when we were young. And I don't know about you guys out there, but I was a guy, you know, I was desperate to do for her whatever could be done for her. And when you're young, you know, you're thinking in terms of making a living and providing them this quality of life that, you know, that you desperately want. And she came from very humble beginnings. My family was wealthy by comparison, and not really, but she came from a family of six kids. There were two of us. So yeah, four extra kids will make an impact on anybody's income. So, but I'm thinking about those promises that I certainly made in my youthful exuberance. And I'm thinking, I don't even remember what they were, but I'm thinking I surely have let her down in some of the most horrible ways with all of that. And I'm realizing now I probably made so many promises that weren't even going to be remotely possible for me. But she made me feel confident, though, so confident that I thought I could give her the world. Time proved me wrong. Overly confident. Yeah, that's what happens when you're young. Part of me is wishing that I could have just an hour with my future self 45 years ago. Part of me is wishing that I could go back to July the 2nd, 1975, that this guy in front of you, this guy behind this microphone, that he could go back to July the 2nd, 1975 and say, let me tell you a few things. Let me tell you how life's going to go. But then I smile, I'm walking, and I'm thinking about this, and I feel a smile come over my face because I'm realizing an hour wouldn't be anywhere near enough time. I wouldn't even be able to get started in an hour to tell this idiotic teenager some of the things that he really desperately needs to know. And then the smile widens as I realize that my future self, I would have likely just scared myself to death. Right. I would have been this version of me talking to that version of me would have probably made that version of me want to just go back home, lock yourself up in the bedroom and just don't come out. All right. Because it's way too dangerous out here. And the result of that would have been no adventure, no drama, just blandness. And I know for a fact that neither of us signed up for that. So I'm walking and I'm resolving I'm going to fix some things. I'm going to work on myself more deeply. I'm going to work on making her life better in any way that I can. And I freely admit in that moment, and I admit it now, a few days removed from this walk, I have no idea how. I'm just confident that I'll figure it out. I'm a smart guy, even if I am 18 hours shy of a degree. And even if she is smarter. Well, I'm way over an hour into the walk by now. And I know that my body needs rest. But, you know, my mind is not going to permit it. Not now. Not at all. Not now. Not with these preoccupations about this girl from Fort Worth, who I know is back home in bed, knocked out, waiting to wake up at the crack of dawn to get up and do it all over again. Jake, that same 10-year-old grandson, and I were watching a Charlie Brown cartoon on TV after school the other day. Charlie Brown, he is smitten by the little redheaded girl, and he's too embarrassed to even speak to her. And I had found my little blondish redheaded girl. I did have the courage to speak to her. I did have the courage to ask her out. And here we are 4 decades down the road together. And as I head toward home, and I'm walking in the dark with only the moonlight, only the starlight and the Big Dipper, and the illumination of my iPhone, I realize that there are so many things about life that I would love to improve. Burdens that I would love to remove for her. Burdens that I wish she could remove from me. But I'm headed home. I'm walking home and I'm knowing that we may never be free from worries. We may never be free from burdens. We may never be free from failures. I just know that the girl grabbing my arm, she sometimes still grabs my arm. And just like I did when I was a teenager, I'm holding on for dear life. Because that's what it is. It is a dear, dear life. Because I'm never going to forget the way she makes me feel. And there it is, kids. You've just listened to episode 5042. I knew I would go longer than I kind of, well, no. I started to say than I kind of sort of planned. I planned on it. I'm glad that you clicked play. I hope you're glad. Think about your life. Think about the people that are important in your life. Think about the way that they make you feel. And I guess if I wanted to give you a takeaway, it would be think about the way that you're able to make them feel. Give it better effort. Just give it better effort. They likely deserve it. And you do too. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio. Welcome to the maiden voyage of Project Craving Encouragement. I'm pleased to announce that the very first guest sharing his stories of encouragement is Dave Jackson. You can find Dave at schoolofpodcasting.com. He also is the host of a live streaming show that is also a video and an audio podcast at askthepodcastcoach.com, a project that has co-host Jim Collison. I would strongly recommend both of those. If you have any interest in becoming a podcaster and using podcasting to get your message out, you need to contact Dave. Just find him at schoolofpodcasting.com. And here is Dave's story.
My very first one was, and it was kind of weird. My dad's name is Jackson and my mom's name is Jackson before she was married. So it was always Grandma Audrey, because you couldn't say Grandma Jackson because that didn't make any sense. So Grandma Audrey said, "You are named after King David in the Bible and the President Andrew Jackson. My friend, you're guaranteed for greatness." And I'd be like, "Nah, Grandma, you're crazy." And she's like, "No, I'm telling you, you got great things ahead of you, kid." So that was one that she always just kind of had. Anytime I didn't think I could do something, she's like, "No, man, you are destined for greatness." That was like her key line for, and then which was great.
Cause, and these key years for you, you're how old?
Oh yeah, this is six, seven. I mean, right. I'm a little kid. And she's like, "No, man, you're destined for greatness," which was great. Cause then when you're like 16, 17 and you bring your first girlfriend over and she busts out all the naked baby pictures, you're like, "Grandma, I'm not feeling great right now." And then probably the next one was, and this one really affected me, was I got fired from my first job, my first official job, being a grocery bagger, because I was so shy. I would not talk to the customers. I just didn't have anything to say. I'd say something like, "Hello, do you need this carried out?" But other than that, I wasn't very talkative. And so they let me go. And I got that job through my high school. It was supposed to be a marketing class. And all it was you got a job at the grocery store. There wasn't really much marketing involved in that. And my teacher pulled me aside and said, "You need to be more like your friend Scott." And my friend Scott was 24/7 nonstop, couldn't shut the kid up. Still is my best friend. And I said, "Dude, that's just not going to happen." And he said, "What I want you to do is," he goes, "I want you to act the way you want to be. And then someday you will be the way you act," which is basically fake it till you make it. And I was like, okay, I'll try. And so I did. And I started pretending I was outgoing, and then now you can't shut me up. So that was one. Cause he said, you're a smart kid. You get good grades. Like, you just need to, like, you know, get some self-esteem and get going there. So that was another one. And then I had, my first, job out of college. I was a, copy repairman, and I don't know what got me into the office of the CEO. He was an open door CEO guy. And I'd done a newsletter. I made a newsletter to help connect the sales staff and the service staff. So everybody knew what the other one was doing. And he thought that was a great idea, and it worked really, really well. And I remember I walked in, and because I'd just gotten out of college, I had not read a thing ever since I got out of school, and I was like, "All right, I'm done with books." And his whole office was just bookshelves everywhere. And I said, "Have you read all these books?" And he goes, "Not all of them page to page, but yeah, pretty much." And he said, "You know," he goes, "I know you just got out of college." He goes, "You do realize that, you know, life is a classroom, and you can get as much education at a lot less fee just by reading books. And that was one that I was, and that's something I've done to this day. I try to either listen or read to a book at least like one a month or every other month or something like that. So that was some encouragement that's, I think, developed me to be who I am. So
let me throw you a curveball and ask about flip it, turn it on its head. The last time that you gave somebody encouragement that you intended to be meaningful.
Yeah, I had I have a friend of mine, Monica Rivera, got to do a TEDx talk. And Monica's got a great background. She's, boy, we talk about a smart cookie. She's done everything, and she does a podcast called You Want to Do What? But Monica did not have a great, as we all, many of us did not have a great childhood, and she's been through some stuff. And so she was kind of having the old, imposter syndrome, and I want to do this right. I want to be perfect and this and that. And she goes, I'm not sure that I could pull this off. I said, no, you are Monica Rivera. I know who you are. You know, kind of grandma, you are destined for greatness kind of thing. And I said, let me tell you something though. I said, it's not going to be perfect. I said, I can guarantee you there's going to be something in your head that the word doesn't come out the way you wanted. I said, it's not going to be absolutely perfect. I said, and you just got to get ready with that's okay. I said, don't freak out because it's not. I said, when I got inducted into the Hall of Fame and I went to say thank you to my invisible sky buddy. And I said, invisible sky body. And that's the one right there for in my head. They went up. Oh, there it is. Okay. Pressure's off. Doesn't need to be perfect anymore because we've already messed it up, but I know what I want to say. Let's, and it does, it's kind of weird. You make that mistake and it kind of takes the pressure off. And when I talked to her later, and of course she completely nailed it. And she goes, yeah, I did that thing. And she goes, nobody else knew it was a problem but me. And it wasn't a problem. It went fine and everything went great. So, it's probably the last one I can think of that I was just like, oh, hold on. Don't freak out here. Let me talk you off the ledge kind of thing. And I get that, not a lot, but a fair amount of people coming up to me going, I want to start a podcast, but who's going to listen to me? And I'm like, you know what? Or they'll say, oh, there's so many podcasts out there that are already doing this. And, I would say, but yeah, every year they come out with more diet books. Right there is like every year they come up with more diet books. Every author could say, what do I need to write about eating less and exercising more that hasn't already been said? But every year there they are every January on the bookshelves. So,
well, and one reason, and I'm, and thanks for it. You're an encouraging kind of guy. And I realize the people listening to this at Leaning Toward Wisdom may or may not have awareness of you. The people that are podcasters certainly do. And I'll put links in the show notes to School of Podcasting and Ask the Pod. I mean, I'll do you right. But you're that kind of a guy. And in spite of one of the things that Dave and I really share is a love of snarkiness and sarcasm. And I would describe both of us as being pretty self-deprecating. But yet at the same time, I do think that both of us are kind of wired to kind of cheer people on. And part of your work at School of Podcasting, I would assume, is largely, I didn't mean to kind of turn this into an interview, but I might as well leverage the time that we've got together for the benefit of my audience. The School of Podcasting to me, and I'm not a member of it, but knowing how you roll, I would assume is largely a lot of that, is a lot of you can do this.
Yeah, I have a Zita, and I can't remember her podcast, shame on me, but she came on, and Zita is not the youngest person I've ever met, and kind of came in with the old, technology and I aren't that. And I think she's up to episode 11, and it took her a while to get episode one out the door because anytime you deal with anything new, it's going to be a little rough, and she's got it down pat. And, it used to be when she would come into the Zoom meeting, she couldn't always figure out how to get the microphone to connect. But now she's got it. So anything that you're doing the first time, it's always a little rough. And that's where that kind of, if you really have a passion to get your message out, it'll push you through to get that out there. Another one is Marcy Rosenbaum was we could just politely, and I say this with all affection, she's kind of a Hausfrau, grew up empty nester, a great background in business, and she wanted to get a podcast. And she said the same thing. She goes, technology and me are not friends. She goes, my VCR is still flashing 12. You don't get it. And she said, I'm not going to be able to do this. That's why I'm asking you. And I said, all right. So we're going to baby step this and you're going to end up in iTunes. And she goes, I'm telling you, I'm just letting you know, your hands are going to be full. And when we finally got her through, she called me up crying on the phone. And I'm like, Marcy, what happened? What's wrong? And she goes, I'm in iTunes. She just cried. She could not believe it. And that puts more gas in my tank than, you know, money's fun and it's great and it pays the bills and things like that. But when I get somebody who told me I can't do this and they call me up crying because they did, that's to me, that's nothing better than that.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very cool. Well, thanks for doing this. I appreciate you.
Oh, thanks, man. It's great.
If you would like to participate in Project Craving Encouragement, you can find out the ways to do that by visiting the website leaningtowardwisdom.com/craving.